It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. We're live on Capitol Hill, and I'm sitting next to Maria Espinoza. You're with a group called the Remembrance Project,
yes.
You've addressed the issue of illegal aliens in this country.
Oh, absolutely. My husband, Tim Lee, and I had started this organization in 2009 once we learned about the sanctuary city policies. And that was because one of the widows of a Houston police officer had filed a lawsuit. And the lawsuit, being a former legal assistant, intrigued me. And we just couldn't believe that there were sanctuaries for illegal aliens.
Now, what did you think of that? The idea that a country would take a would have cities or counties or states within it would take a policy that would say, "Listen, we're gonna have certain places where certain laws just simply don't apply to certain people."
Correct. Naively, I thought that it would be maybe 2 years raising awareness, because after we learned about sanctuary city policies, we started researching. Tim started a database, and we expanded that to all across the United States. And I thought, 2 years, we would just tell them what's going on, and naively. And then we learned that, my goodness, they knew exactly what was taking place. They didn't care, and as long as they were being reelected or monetarily gaining from that.
Because you mentioned reelection, there are politicians who sign off on these policies. They applaud these policies.
Yes, they do, and they're right in bed with the U.S. Chambers of Commerce and the hotel restaurant industry, and, you know, the list is long. So, you know, we won't get into it right now, but, you know, what we concentrate on are the killings, the most egregious, due to illegal immigration.
And how do you do that? How do you focus on the people who are the actual victims and their families or survivors?
Well, we raise awareness through our Stolen Lives Quilt banners, and those are 6-foot-long fabric banners, and they represent 3 victims on each 6-foot-long banner, 3 feet high, digitally printed, full color, has a short story of who the person was, when they were killed, where they were killed, and sometimes we get a little poem or just a note from the family member. You know, 4 children wrote a note under their mother's panel saying, you know, "Mommy, our greatest cheerleader, we miss you." You know, things like that. It's real, and these are the real stories and what's taking place all across the United States, Lars. And you multiply this to how many lives this affects. We have a lot of broken families out there, and our government doesn't care.
Let me ask you about something. People are going to notice you have an Hispanic surname, and they're going to say, but we hear that all Latinos in America support the idea of sanctuary cities. All Latinos support the idea of the government simply not enforcing the law on those who've come into the country illegally, who predominantly are Hispanic.
Well, that's the biggest lie, I can tell you that. And you know, that's political correctness of decades of spreading lies like that, or fake news, whatever you want to call it. But that's not true. There are many Latinos, and my father was born in Mexico, came here the right way. He never flew the Mexican flag. You know, that just wasn't who he was.
He loved
his country. He was an American. When he stepped foot in here, he was an American, and that's how he acted, and he embraced it. You know, and that's one thing. We started an initiative called America First Latinos a couple years ago, and we actually penned a letter to every state governor asking them for burial, medical, hospitalization, legal assistance through help navigate through the legal system for victims, because we figure that, look, maybe these state governors would listen to Hispanics. No, they ignored us and all. However,
they ignored you.
We got about 6 responses, which were very lukewarm. Your boilerplate, thank you, reaching out, we'll get in touch, and here's our website. You know, please donate, right? but we tweaked that letter a year later and sent it to the 4 remaining GOP candidates, and the one who responded right away was Donald Trump. And as you know, Lars,
did that surprise you?
Yes and no, because he had already reached out to us, and he, you know, we took the angel moms and dads and remembrance families to Mr. Trump. He sought us out. He found some of the families talking about supporting his words. So when he announced, we absolutely said it. We support this man's words. This is exactly what we want said out there on a national platform. And everyone needs to know he was very welcoming, and he did respond to that letter. And, in fact, he sent his official statement that said a Trump administration would support the Remembrance Project national program. And I think he's fulfilling that promise and creating voice. There's a lot that has to be done, of course. You know, we've collaborated with the Counseling Team International and Care Force US to help bring some family crisis intervention to the families that need it most. You know, we had an instance in Texas, very, very unfortunate, where Mr. Funderburg's son and his daughter-in-law were mowed over by an illegal alien last June. Then they had a hearing just past March, and his younger brother, Mr. Funderburg's younger son, pardon me, took his own life after being so distraught over the loss of his brother and thinking that the illegal alien was going to be set free, and learning about the details of how his brother and his sister-in-law, Pat, died.
And many of them are set free. And I'm aware of other stories from my neck of the woods, and I'm, I don't know, 1,800, 2,000 miles from the border, but the issue seems to extend to every part of America, where people literally have killed other people in America. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be put on trial in Mexico. They won't even be tried in America for a crime that occurred in America.
Exactly. And actually, this guy was on his way out. They had removed him and had him in a detention center further south. And Mr. Funderburg worked to get him back and try him. He's spending 15 years for killing two people. And I blame indirectly a third person. You know, so this is happening all over the country. We're just so fortunate that we have a leadership now, and that's why we moved to Washington, D.C., to be able to be right here and help drive that America First agenda that President Trump has implemented.
And today, the House votes on two major pieces of legislation, and I hear that it will sail through the House with full support, not from Democrats for the most part,
right.
but it will get to the Senate, and we may not even get all Republicans getting behind it, let alone getting some support. Are there any Democrat senators that have impressed you with their support for your cause? It seems a fair question, because there are Republicans who support things that are typically those from the left. You know, they will support abortion. They'll support other things that you would ordinarily expect from the other side. I don't see any Democrats out there.
No, they don't do that. They stay together. It's sort of tribal, it seems like. You know, no matter what it is, you know, they're going to stick to the party, whether it's crazy or makes common sense. Has no common sense. They're just going to stick to what the party wants, and that's very wrong. And I think, being a former Democrat as well, I think that's what's really driving and why President Trump won, was because he did resonate. His message resonated, and people are tired. They're tired of being ignored. Not only our families, of course, but the average American person. They're tired of being ignored, and they've had enough.
Ms. Espinoza, if my listeners want to go to your website and find out more about the project and perhaps even support your efforts, I support your efforts. Tell me how they can do that.
Yes, theremembranceproject.org, and we are a 501c3. This November, we're going to have our second annual national conference right here in Washington, D.C. Last year, Donald Trump was our keynote speaker. And so we're just going to ask people to watch the website. We'll put up information, update it and everything, but it'll be right here in Washington, D.C., and we're here to send a message, Lars.
Well, I'm glad you are, because you mentioned that he was your keynote speaker last year
when
he was still a candidate.
Yes.
And this is an issue that scares politicians away. Even those who think that you're right are afraid of perhaps taking a stance in favor.
Well, we're going to encourage them to do what's right. And my husband, Tim Ling, started a new 501c4, so I think that'll give us a little more latitude as well, and to encourage some of this good legislation as well.
Ms. Espinoza, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Lars.
We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill with the Federation for American Immigration Reform. We'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
Real Red Meat Radio on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. Well, we're back in Washington, D.C., right here on Capitol Hill, just a few blocks away from the Capitol building. And in there, a decision's being made in the House of Representatives about Kate's Law and another major piece of legislation, both of which are designed to address the problem of illegal aliens in this country, and in particular, the violence they do to United States citizens like Kate Steinle. And I thought we'd talk about the gang problem. And sitting in front of me is Richard Valdemar, who's a retired California Gang Task Force member, retired from the Sheriff's Department. Right, Richard?
Yes, Los Angeles County Sheriff's.
But you've kept your hand in because you're teaching at the academy, you're writing for magazines, you're doing all kinds of things.
Yes, when I came over, anybody in law enforcement who retires from California usually goes to another state to get out of California. And I went to Arizona. My family's from Arizona, and I love Arizona, so that's where I retired. But my captain also retired to Arizona, and he got me involved in the local gang unit, and I wound up being part of the Arizona Gang Task Force. I'm a civilian reserve, or I was up until recently a civilian reserve with the Arizona Gang Task Force.
Is that the Get'em?
Get'em.
Get'em. I like that.
It's a great name. Gang Intelligence and Immigration Enforcement Teams.
Because there is an immigration or illegal alien component to gangs in America, right? The most powerful gang.
Absolutely. What happens is the immigrants come into, and this has happened since the gangs of New York. The immigrants come into a gang-infested area. They're picked on by the local gang members, so they form their own gang. In the case of Mara Salvatrucha, something everybody's heard
about. How do
you
say his name again?
Mara Salvatrucha.
Mara Salvatrucha.
Trucha, yeah. Trucha is a Kalo term for lookout. And Mara is a slang term for gang, and Salva for Salvadorian. So it's Mara, gang, Salva, Salvadorian, Trucha, lookout.
Lookout.
Look out for us. We're coming. And but these guys were children soldiers in the revolution in El Salvador. So they're 12 years old, but they can field strip an AK-47, right? They land in the Pico Union District of Los Angeles, and the 18th Street immediately pounces on them, victimizes them. Some of them joined the 18th Street, and the others formed Mara Salvatrucha. So now there's always a rivalry between these two factions, right? You were once one of us, and now you've joined them, and so it's, you know, war, eternal war. So wherever you find MS-13, you're going to find them. So they're immigrants who are Americanized in the gang life, and then we deported them and we sent them to El Salvador. They started El Salvador, Mara Salvatrucha branch, and then they landed after deportation and tried to come back in the United States, a lot of them through the East Coast. And so Washington, D.C. became a center for them.
That surprised me when you told me that. This city that we're sitting in right now is a center for MS-13.
Yes.
For Mara Salvatrucha.
Yes. MS-13.
Yeah. MS-13.
Yeah.
So what do we do to get rid of these people?
Well, we enforce our immigration laws and the other laws that are on the book, because while they're here, they're also recruiting. So members of Mara Salvatrucha are also from Honduras, from Guatemala, from Nicaragua, you know, anywhere where this Hispanic community sets down and they can have a immigrant group to recruit from, that's where they're going to recruit. So we dry up the recruitment, and the second part of that is we take off the head of the monster. We prosecute the leaders of this through the RICO statutes and the conspiracy statutes. That way, the people who are calling the shots, who are not necessarily involved directly with the violence, can be prosecuted for those crimes.
Now, I'm talking to the man you've seen on Gangland on the History Channel. You might have read articles he's written for Police Magazine. He's formerly with the California Gang Task Force. There's a terrorism and an Arab terrorism component to all of this.
Yeah, since we're using MS-13 as an example, and
yeah,
it's not the only example, well, I'll talk about that. In Los Angeles, when I was working in the FBI task force, we worked Mara Salvatrucha in Los Angeles, and MS-13's leader at that time was a guy named Nelson Komandari. Now, Komandari is not a Latino name. It's Palestinian, okay? And the reason for that is that the civil war in El Salvador was assisted by Palestinian radicals. And so if you go to San Salvador in their one of the centers in this town, there is a statue of Yasser Arafat. So the influence of Middle Easterners, especially revolutionary and jihadists, has already touched El Salvador. The same thing has happened in all these, remember at that time in the 80s, we had all these South American, Central American civil wars going on, Nicaragua and Honduras attempt, and the attempt in Guatemala. So these influence, and then the other one is Panama. I got to mention that Noriega ran Panama,
yeah,
and we helped them, right?
Yeah, till we didn't.
But that was the banking center for all the narcotics trade. So the cocaine comes up from Colombia and Bolivia, and it comes through Panama. And Panama had the off-the-record banking system, which they got from the Arabs. So it was Arab bankers and financiers that financed the drug trade. So, I get these arguments about the, controversy in that we were allowing cocaine to come into the a lot of that was coming from Arab countries, and they were financing it and bringing it in.
And is their interest primarily in simply making money from these gang associations, or is it also because it's disruptive to America?
No, in Islam, the use of drugs is or even alcohol, it's all forbidden. But they're interested in making money. They call us the great Satan. We have these vices that they make money from, and the money that they use finances their terrorist acts. The FBI agent I was working with one time, he told me, "Oh yeah, now you're the gang. You're the terrorist expert, huh? First you're the gang expert, now you're the terrorist expert. Why would these Hispanic Catholics have anything to do with jihadists and Middle
Muslims,
Eastern terrorists?"
Yeah.
And I said, "You ever hear of the
enemy of
Ireland?
Ireland,
the IRA,
and Sinn Féin.
Sinn Féin. Who trained them?"
The Palestinians.
The Palestinians.
That's right.
Exactly.
And they went to the Middle East and got training and then came back.
Yes.
And they knew how to shoot guns. And
nice Catholic boys.
Nice Catholic boys.
Okay. So I told them, look, the enemy, like you said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And if I can use that guy to destroy my enemy, I'm going to do it. And so that's what they did.
So again, how do we get back?
It's not that easy for one thing, because he's going to meet resistance from last administrators in those departments, and from
who are civil service lifers, right?
Right, and also from the courts and the whole industry of immigration law things. There's all these things in place where lawyers make money from the immigration laws. So you have. You have the traffickers charging them a fee, and by the way, it's not $100 or something like
that. You talked about the beast, the train that runs up and down. What's the fee like?
The fee, it's human cargo, is a certain percentage of everything you own, and if you're a woman, it's rape. But when you cross the border from a coyote, say you finally do get to Mexico and you want to cross the border, it's $5,000, $10,000. And when you come across the border, they'll hold you captive for a few months, contact your family and say, "We want another $5,000, $10,000, right, to cross the border." And then you get caught and sent back. You get another $10,000 when you cross again. Okay, so this is a big industry with lots of money.
The United States government has been complicit in this.
Yes.
Right? Because when the Obama administration said, when people start crossing, we're going to let them cross, and he portrayed it as a humanitarian measure.
Right.
The problem is somebody else was collecting the toll.
That's
on
right.
These people.
And the State Department actually printed materials to help these people come across. It's crazy. You know, who's the victim of this? The victim of this is always the immigrant. He's always the victim. They're not champions by allowing this to go on. They're immoral.
Richard, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very, very much. We'll call on you again, and I appreciate you stopping by.
Okay.
We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill. It's put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get some of your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show. Connect with Lars 24/7 on Facebook and Twitter. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live here at Feet to the Fire, which is an event put on Capitol Hill every year by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. It's aimed at reminding members of the House and the Senate and the President, although this year I don't think we need to remind the President of the United States about the issue of illegal aliens, enforcement of America's immigration laws, and now we've added to that building a wall, if the Congress can just get its head where it belongs and start doing the things they need to do. The gentleman sitting next to me, Steve Ronnebeck, is a man who knows the dangers and the issues of illegal aliens all too well. Mr. Ronnebeck, thank you for taking the time, and tell me about your son.
January 22nd, 2015, Grant was working the overnight shift at the convenience store he worked at.
And where was that?
Quick Trip, Mesa, Arizona. About 3:45 in the morning. A man named Apollinar Altamirano came in, wanted to buy cigarettes, dumped a jar of change out on the counter. Grant went to count the change. Man says, what, you're not going to give me my cigarettes? Grant said, hey, I got to count your change. Man pulled a gun. Grant immediately gave him the cigarettes. And the man basically executed him, shot him point blank in the face, and then stepped over his body, grabbed a couple more packs of cigarettes, and walked out the door.
All of this was documented on video.
Video, and there was a witness.
There was a witness standing there.
There was.
So this man committed a murder because of the failure of your son to quickly supply him with a pack of cigarettes. For something as inconsequential as that, he took your son's life.
Yes, sir.
How'd you hear the news?
Well, I actually found out on our local affiliate, Fox 10.
You saw it on the news?
Yeah, they didn't have it. They didn't post his name, but I was at work at the time. I had gone in early that morning, and so I saw it on the website on Fox 10. My ex-wife had actually called me and said, hey, something happened at that QT. You need to get a hold of Grant. I tried to call his phone and didn't answer, and I tried to call the store. Nobody answered, so that's when I had gotten on Fox 10 website, and I saw the picture of the store, and then I saw our car parked in the parking lot. So told my boss, hey, I got to go. And I worked about 3 miles from that store, and I showed up at the store and got out of my car, and as soon as I got out, I saw one of Grant's other managers getting out of his car, and he's just crying, and I'm like, hey, where's my son? Where's Grant? And he couldn't even answer me, and I knew at that point Grant was gone.
When did you find out that your son's life had been taken by a person who was illegally in this country?
It was probably 4 or 5 hours later. The police detectives came to the house, and they were explaining to us what had happened and that they had caught the man, and that's when they went into... He's an illegal immigrant. He had been arrested prior for doing other crimes and basically went through the whole story of what he'd been into. So,
and in telling you that he'd had prior contacts with law enforcement had an opportunity to have him removed. Had he been removed from the country before?
No, he was out on a $10,000 ICE bond.
$10,000 bond that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, had allowed him to be out of custody.
Yeah.
So he was already on his way to being deported at that point.
Well, his deportation hearing wasn't even scheduled. He was a dreamer, so he qualified for the DACA because he came over when he was 14. But in the time that he came over, he got into drugs. He was a self-proclaimed member of the Sinaloa drug cartel and the Mexican mafia.
Self-proclaimed.
2.5 years prior to killing Grant, he had been arrested for breaking into a woman's home, held her captive naked for a week, sexually assaulted her over and over again through that week, filled her full of heroin for the week, and he was able to plead that down to felony burglary.
That was it. No assault on the woman.
Nope. And he never did any prison time. He was just put out on probation. And he killed Grant shortly after he got off probation for those crimes.
I'm talking to Steve Ronnebeck, whose son's life was taken by an illegal alien that law enforcement had had contact with, that ICE had had contact with. Now, you, I'm sure, along with all the rest of us, heard the claims during the last 8 years of the previous presidency that DACA was intended for law-abiding young men and women or girls and boys who had been brought here as children, and the thinking was, well, they didn't have any choice in coming in here, so we're going to give them a pass. I didn't agree with the program, but it was supposed to be only for people who were not involved in crimes, and especially violent crimes. What did you think of of that news that you got from the detectives?
It's so hard to verbalize how you feel when your son's killed, and it's even harder when you find out who killed him and you find out all about them. Obviously, President Obama's plan was flawed.
What do you think should happen now, and what inspired you to come back?
What should happen now is we need to enact the laws that we already have on the books. We need to follow our immigration laws. The vote this afternoon on the new laws that are coming, Grant's Law is part of one of those bills. What we need to do is these laws that are coming this afternoon, Kate's Law, the Davis-Oliver Act, Grant's Law, named after my son, Sarah's Law, after Sarah Root, and then the Sanctuary City Law, written by Chairman Goodlatte. We need those to pass. I mean, we're sure that they're going to pass the House today, but the big problem is going to be the Senate, and that's the fight. We need to get those through the Senate.
So, is Senator Flake from Arizona going to vote for it? Is Senator McCain from Arizona going to vote for the law named after a constituent of both of those senators?
You know, I would hope so, but I don't know that they will.
What does that say about our system, that we have laws on the books and we apply them to a lot of American citizens, but we won't apply the law to people who are criminal aliens and in some cases dangerous criminal aliens?
You know, I don't even know what to say to it. It baffles me, and it baffles the other families that they would actually allow this to keep happening. Michelle Root yesterday said it plain enough that the ones that don't vote for these, they're going to have the next victim's blood on their hands.
I think you're right about that, and I appreciate you coming to Feet to the Fire, because we look for ways to influence members of Congress by just talking about the issue, but you have a very personal connection to this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, what I do is I don't just fight for Grant. I'm fighting for Brandon Mendoza, Sarah Root, Dominic Durden, Spencer Golvach, and all the other victims. And those other victims also include, you know, the children that are sexually molested by these illegal immigrants, and the identity theft. The man that killed my son, come to find out, he had 10 assumed names and 4 different Social Security numbers.
Did you visit the White House yesterday?
I did.
Tell me about that.
It was an amazing experience. I got to sit directly across from President Trump. You know, and every time I've met the man, every time I've talked to the man, he's genuine, he's honest, and he's keeping his promises. And he made his promises. And he's doing everything he can to keep them. Unfortunately, we do have some members of our government that don't want to let the wall get built. And I think that is absolutely tragic, because a lot of these criminals, even if we deported them, they'll be back in a few months, if not a few weeks.
Mr. Ronnebeck, thank you very much. I know it's a tough subject to speak about, but I know that you came here for a reason, and we really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, sir.
That's Steve Ronnebeck, who's here in memory of his son and in aid of all of those other sons and daughters out there whose lives might be affected adversely by illegal aliens in this country. We're live on Capitol Hill today at Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Back to the Lars Larson Show. We're spending a couple of days on Capitol Hill, and we're talking about the issues of illegal aliens. I don't call them immigrants. If you come to my country illegally, I don't think you're an immigrant. But the point of Feet to the Fire, 60 talk show hosts from around America who are broadcasting from Capitol Hill for these couple of days, is to draw attention to the issue, to remind members of Congress who seem to be a little forgetful that we want to have our immigration laws enforced, and if necessary, some of the laws changed. And the Congress is considering 2 major changes today. Don Rosenberg is sitting in front of me. Don, why are you here at Feet to the Fire?
Well, I'm here. My son was killed by an illegal alien in 2010 in San Francisco. And ironically, I actually got into the immigration issue a little backwards, because we were told that the guy was here legally, just didn't have a driver's license. So my first foray into this, I was just researching unlicensed drivers, saw how, you know, what a big problem it was, 7,500 people a year getting killed. Had nothing to do with immigration. just had to do with being unlicensed. And that's where I started my public advocacy. But it turned into, you know, when I was testifying and other people testifying and they're sort of making excuses, oh, they're a contributor, so they should be able to drive. And it became an, you know, an issue of, well, if they kill some people, well, that's too bad. I mean,
just
almost
the cost of doing business.
Right. So cost of doing business, and because they give us more than whatever. So it forced me to start looking and researching what they were saying. And I basically found that this is all a lie. It's not even close to being true. I do have a statistical background from being a publisher for 15 years of a magazine that was, it was a trade magazine, so nobody would ever have heard of it. But it was, it trained me a lot of how, you know, there's that old saying, there's lies, there's damn lies and statistics. So I know how to look at them. And sometimes it's as easy as just doing a little simple math. A little multiplication or division, and it's like, well, that doesn't work. So here I am now. It's, you know, the last maybe 4 or 5 years, it's been more of an immigration or an illegal immigration issue that I've been, you know, working on than the driving, and plus the fact in California they gave them all driver's licenses. And
yeah, what'd you think of that? The fact that the legislature decided that illegal aliens can get a driver's license, and they say this will make us safer.
Well, after the, I'm glad you asked me that question. After the, you know, after my son was killed, and I, you know, logically you would think if you got a driver's license, it would make you a safer driver. I mean, that's pure logic.
Maybe. Yeah.
But when you start delving into it, there's no truth to it whatsoever. And not just for people that are here illegally, for anybody. And I did, not only did I do a lot of study, out of the 39 million people in California, I was the only person to testify against the driver's license bill.
No one else?
They sort of kept it hidden. There was very little publicity about it because they didn't want people showing up. And I will tell you, in my testimony, both written and verbal, not one time did I ever say they shouldn't get a license because they're here illegally. What I said was they shouldn't get licenses because as a group, and that's the only way we can deal with them as a group, because we don't know who they are, they're terrible drivers, and I loaded all the statistics in.
Now, my audience is going to want to hear at least some of those statistics. How do we know they're terrible drivers?
Well, in California, and this is what actually got California, I mean, they used a study in reverse. California published, the DMV published a study at the end of 2012. And the title of the study was Licensed Drivers Safer Than Unlicensed Drivers. So you think, okay, give them a license, they'll be better. However, when you read the study, they went all the way back to 1987. So this was 1987.
So right after the amnesty.
From 87 to 94, illegal aliens could still get driver's licenses in California. Mm-hmm. They didn't get cut off till 94. Cutting through all the numbers and all the and everything in there, their conclusion was from 87 to 94, and now you're talking 94 to 2011 or 12, whatever year they went through to end it, that these drivers, with or without licenses, were horrible drivers. And that it didn't make, you know, having a license prior didn't make them any better. But I wanted to go a step further. Why are they bad drivers? So I went to the World Health Organization and started looking at statistics for Mexico, for Central American countries. They're like, traffic fatalities aren't 10% higher, 20% higher. They're 1,500% higher. It's outrageous. And I've been to some of those countries, and just they'll drive across medians, they'll drive up on the sidewalk, because the laws, they have the same laws that we do, but they're not enforced.
So you would think, though, that if I were to push back on that, I mean, I agree with
you. Yeah, right.
But if I were to push back, I'd say, but when they come to an environment where we do have enforcement of the laws, and America has reasonably good enforcement of traffic laws. We write speeding tickets. We let, you know, we tick people for not having insurance, not having a registration, not having a license, driving too fast, running stoplights, that their behavior would change.
Well, yes, except for the fact that when they get tickets, they don't pay them.
Because they don't have to.
They use fake ID. Well, they don't really use any ID. They'll say, I don't have any identification. I'm here illegally. And my name is, you know, whatever it is, and they give a fake address. I'll tell you a quick funny story. Well, it's not really funny. I got a phone call from a retired, you know, I do a lot of radio in California, and
sure.
I got a call from a retired police officer, and this was, you know, months after my son was killed, and he told me that there were over a million, and he says this is the department I worked in, there was over a million 12500A, which is driving without a license, open citations in the city of L.A.
In the city of L.A.
He says there's probably another million or so in the county because they don't pay him. And I thought, oh, boy, that sounds really strange. So I called the police inspector in San Francisco who was on our case, and he was a great guy. And I said, this is, you know, I know you're a smaller city, obviously, but is this possible that there would be? He says, absolutely. We have 350,000. And he said, we used to have to go once a month, every officer, every inspector had to go out and try to close some of them. You know, go to the address. You got a warrant now for the guy's arrest for failure to pay the ticket. He said, we stopped doing it because we're going to empty lots. We're going, you know, some old lady answers the door. And then he said, I never asked him. He said one time the address on there was police headquarters. And I never asked
That's
him,
crazy.
Are you joking or are you telling the truth? But why would you pay it? I had a guy, I was doing a local Fox News segment one time. They came to my house to film. And the guy who was the cameraman said to me, I'm also a police sheriff. That's, you know, my other work. And he said, you know, when we pull somebody over and they don't have a license, you know, we look in their glove compartment, we look in their car for guns or whatever. He said, you open up their glove compartment, there'll be 15 or 20 tickets in there, all with different names, all with different addresses. They don't even throw them away. They just, okay, give me a ticket, shove it in there. So that's why they continued to drive the way they did. But also, I mean, think of, you know, I spent some time living in New York City. I wasn't driving, but, you know, take a person in New York that's been living there and put them in a small town in Kansas. They're still going to be a very aggressive driver.
Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment. We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.